This is an ABC podcast.
Roots and Shoots with Amber and Sabrina on ABC Radio Perth and WA and the ABC Listener.
And it's good morning from her.
And it's good morning from herses.
Good morning.
All the herses are here. In fact, we're all hers this morning.
Are. There's a bunch of she's.
Yep. It's dominated by absolute intelligence and marvellous everything else.
Dazzling beauty. You left off at least. Good morning,
for
everyone.
Sure.
It's Roots and Shoots time, and you guys are already off to the races. 1300 221 0025 if you would like to ask Sabrina Hahn a question. Now, you are going to be at the River Guardians later this week.
Yep, I'll be running out of the studio and going straight there. So hopefully I'll get there before 10:30 because apparently I'm on at 10:15. But we'll see how we go.
Gee whiz, who planned that?
And then I'm running from there straight to a two-hour workshop I'm doing for the City of Melville. It'll be – it's a bang, bang, bang kind of a morning.
What's your talk about at River Guardians?
Talking about, you know, you've got to think about if you were to swim in the river, Swan or the Canning, and you swallowed a mouthful of water, you've got to think about what's in that water.
Yeah.
You know, gardeners – can make a big difference to what's in the water. So I'll be talking a little bit about, think about what you put in your garden because it's going to end up in the river.
Yeah.
So the
how
things
far
like
back
that,
from the river does that hold true?
That's a very good question. But I should imagine, because we have an underground water system here, I reckon you could go as far back as 50K.
Oh, okay, wow.
Yeah, because the soils are so porous.
Into the aquifer, yes.
Yeah, and all our underground water system, like the underground water that's closest to the surface, they actually all link up in a wet season and they're all connected. So basically, you know, Perth is built on a wetland, and we forget about that.
Yeah.
Aboriginal people talk about that all the time when, you know, in their grandparents' day, how all the lakes joined up. And we forget that because we've filled everything in and removed all the bushland and the wetlands. So I think it's not just about the river, is it? It's really about all the subterranean life that lives in soil. So we really need to think about what we need to pour, what we pour on our gardens, including fertilizers, pesticides, insecticides, because that goes right through the food chain, above and below ground.
What about compost? Compost all right?
Compost is great.
Compost is your friend.
Yeah.
Write the compost song.
And it recycles all our waste products.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. There are ways and there are ways, aren't they?
Yep.
Why not kick off with an aromophila? Oh, John. In Hillary's. Tell me about your aromophila.
Morning, John.
I put these in about 18 months, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I grew like crazy, absolutely grew like crazy. And I'm trying to not actually hedge them, but just stop their growth too high because we've got a lovely view across the road to a lake.
Oh, yeah, you have two.
And then all of a sudden, they just started to die off.
Okay, so now, are your aromophilas on reticulation?
Yes, they were. And when I Googled, it says don't overwater them.
Yeah.
So I cut it off and they get just a little bit of overspray from the lawn.
Yep. Okay. Well,
they
that's all right.
Don't get direct watering anymore.
Okay.
Yep.
Because aromophila do not like to have a lot of water. But
right.
They do like to be fertilised, John.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
Yep.
So one of the big aromophila growers up in Gemmalling, he puts chicken poo on his and they've done really well, which I would have thought was an absolute no-no, but apparently not. So less water. You definitely need to fertilise them if you want to get them to flower well. But I can see yours are dead and brown sort of in the middle.
Woody.
Yep.
Yeah, they're woody.
Woody.
So how long have they been in the ground, John?
I'd say probably coming up to 2 years.
Okay. So what I would do, some of those branches that are really brown, so don't do a big chop just across the top and sides. I want you to take some of the branches, like a third. I want you to prune two-thirds off, and they should reshoot at the base. But you don't want to do it all at once. It'll be too much.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So give them some native slow-release fertilizer. You could sprinkle a bit of compost around the base of it. Water that in and then see how they go.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, John.
You're very welcome, John. Thank you for that. And Mike is in Safety Bay. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
What's your question for Sab?
Yeah, I'm setting up a wicker garden bed.
Yep.
Not a basket. Quite a large one, I'm embarrassed to admit.
Why? Why be embarrassed, Mike?
Well, you're not supposed to do them this big, I don't think.
You can do them as big as you want. It's your wicking bed. Okay. You can have it filling up your whole backyard if you want, Mike.
Well, if I took a photo, okay. I've got the raised sides, and I've got the pond liner, and I'm all good to go. And
yep.
And I went to get my scoria,
yep.
Which I thought I could get in like 16 or 20 kilo bags from my favourite hardware store, starting with B.
Yeah.
But not available anywhere.
Oh, wonder why.
So then I went to Mr. Google and said, well, what's the alternative? And he listed this thing called perlite.
Yeah.
And I've done a bit of research on that, and that's a volcanic type thing.
Yeah, you'd need a heap of perlite.
Yeah.
Because it's very small.
Thinking, well, what's an alternative? Just gravel that I can put in that's not going to kill my plants?
Okay. So gravel will mean that you, if ever you need to move that, you'll have to come in with a dozer. Because gravel is so heavy. Yeah. Now, what you can use is a combination of perlite and drink water bottles.
What?
So basically that lower level is just to hold water, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what a lot of people do, and it works brilliantly, is you know, the 1 litre, you've got a big bed, so go for the 2 litre soft drink bottles or juice bottles. Put the lid on so the bottles are actually empty, not full.
Yeah.
Okay. And you fill the base up with those, and then you put a layer of the, I'd put a layer of, just a thin layer of gravel over the top of that, and some of the gravel will fall through.
Essentially just taking up space, yeah?
Yeah, it's just taking up space so it holds water, but the water can drain through from the top if it rains.
Okay. Now, when you say gravel, what sort of gravel? Can I use blue metal?
Yeah, you certainly can. It's probably going to cost you a fair bit. You know you can get pea gravel.
Pea gravel, yeah.
Yeah, and you can buy that in bulk.
Uh-huh. That's the little round.
But you could certainly put blue metal in.
Okay, because I had a feeling that there were some gravels that I could put in, and I thought blue metal was one.
Yep, you can. And they release a mineral, which is good.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay.
The things you learn about gravel on this is the Gravel Hour. Thank you very much, Mike, in Safety Bay. Good luck with your wicking bed. 1300 221 0025 is the number to get in touch with Sabrina Hahn, National Treasure. Judy from Carlisle has called. Hi, Judy.
Hello.
Hello, Judy.
Hi, Sabrina. I have bought a couple of those, you know, the Banksia, the big white woolly one, gets an enormous woolly.
Oh, yeah, flower. Yeah.
So I want to put them in pots.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering what, I've got lots of sand and stuff around my property at the back that can be gotten rid of. So what can I do to actually make a potting mix rather than going out and buying one?
Okay, so sand is okay, but you have to mix it either with the coir peat, because sand will compact and it won't, if you've got it in a pot, it's not going to have enough drainage and air pockets in between the particles.
Yeah.
So I would use, even if you bought a bag of cheap potting mix because that's got the bark in it, or you buy a bag of bark, of mulch. Yep. So you need mulch, then you'll need, I wouldn't put more than a third of sand in and then two-thirds of the coir peat.
Yeah, you know, your last caller was talking about gravel. My son lives in Bindoon, which is all gravel.
Ah, right.
And I was actually wondering if I could get some gravel from his property and then put it in with the sand.
You're a very small amount, Judy, because that compacts and... I would use it cautiously in a pot.
Right. Okay then. I think but I can use the sand and no compost though.
Oh yeah, you can use a tiny bit of compost. Tiny bit of compost and a tiny bit of gravel. Because Banksia is like really nutrient poor soil. Yeah. But it has to be free draining. And that's why I'm worried about the gravel.
Okay. Mm. I've actually got some Leschenoltias to live this year because I've put them in really poor soil and
it feels so I know, it's counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yes.
And Banksias are even worse. They just like it, you know, the worst possible conditions to grow in that you could possibly think. They love it.
Isn't that great, and though, that we're finally coming around to knowing that plants that are indigenous to this area actually require very little from us.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. It's like husbands, you know, the less they require of you, the better. Don't you reckon, Judy? Oh, did Judy hang up on us?
Oh, she probably has a lovely husband.
Like, I don't need to know about your husbands. I do have a lovely husband. Mo is in Netherlands. Good morning, Mo.
Oh, good morning, ladies. I don't know if you can help me. My beautiful big gardenia plant, I've sent a photo of it.
Yep, got
in
it.
In the pot. Mm-hmm. It seems to know they need some medicine or maybe a nice warm blanket, but since the weather's gone cold, she's got all these yellow leaves. Which we never have, yes.
That's quite normal for gardenias to do that when you get a drop in temperature at night time. And also your pot is too small for that gardenia.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Okay, so it's run out of soil space. And now when you get it out of that pot, Mo, you will notice that the root system of the plant has taken up the entire area.
Oh, dear. So I need a much bigger pot.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Do you have to trim the roots a little bit when you pull it out of there? Give them
you
a little
can,
bit of a haircut?
Yeah, but you need to prune the head off as well. Ooh. So don't worry about the yellow leaves because that's very normal at this time of the year.
Okay, and when can I cut her back a bit? I mean, I started that from a baby and I really had to watch it for the white fly and all the rest of it. And this year had so many flowers.
Oh,
beautiful.
Fantastic.
Beautiful.
Yes, you can. You definitely can. Not too hard, but you can definitely trim it.
What? One third off?
Yeah,
the top?
No more than a third at this time of the year.
Oh, do it this time of the year, do it.
Well, you need to do something because it's it's not happy, Mo.
No, there we go.
No.
You happy? Okay. Are you happy, Mo? That's the most important thing.
Well, I will be if I don't kill it by pruning it off or
just a very small tip prune and then you can go hard in September.
See, we've got men who prune too much and women who don't prune enough, Mo. Get in there. Try to be the middle ground.
No chainsaws around here.
So. No, excellent. It's what we like to hear.
Mo, thanks for that. Billy's got an orange tree she's got an orange tree. It's 1 metre high. Hi, Billy.
Hey, good morning, Mo. friends who are more popular than Taylor Swift and her showgirl.
It's true.
It's very true, Billy. Well, and you know what? One day we're going to do a road show in our own caravan.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. And we'll be billionaires too.
Yeah, we'll bring a baby goat that we feed it with mineral water from Paris.
We will. What's wrong with your orange tree, Billy?
I've just stated it, and you lovely ladies have given me advice. It's about a metre and a half high and round.
Yeah.
I'm getting lots of nice, smallish-sized, juicy oranges.
Yeah.
Now, should I be happy with that? I like the advice you gave me with my figs.
Yeah.
Should I just thin it out a bit and get bigger ones, or just be happy with what I've got?
Well, I wouldn't thin it out at the moment, but I would definitely thin it out come September.
Okay.
When it starts to warm up a bit, because too many stems, little stem growth, can't hold the fruit when it develops. So you want your little orange tree to put its energy into a few major branches that are going to be the bearers of marvelous fruit.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah. They are. They're super good. And I put a call out to that young Travis, who put a ring on that little Supergirl's finger, to contact you, because I'm sure they're going to get down in the dirt and, you know, rustle around, and, you know, they're going to, gardening will be, you know, there'll be a lot of shrubbery work and stuff, and I put a call out to him to get in touch with you too.
Thank you for that, Billy.
Thank you, Billy.
1-300-221-025 is the number if you'd like to ask Sab a question. Pat in Wembley has dialed that. Pat, can you turn your radio down, love? Hello, Pat.
Yes.
Oh, it's Pat.
Oh, it's Pat. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Sabrina. I'm a long-time listener of your show, and I've got a question. Do you know a practical solution how to eradicate horseflies in plague proportion?
Oh, my goodness. I absolutely don't, Pat.
Move, Pat. Sell the house. Up you go.
Yeah, I already live in a flat in Wembley. I'm asking on the behalf of people who live in the bush.
Right.
Okay. Ryan and Lorraine, say hello to them. They're probably listening.
We, you know who we would need to answer that question?
Dr. Bugger
Lugs. Dr. Bugger Lugs. Daryl, if you're listening to the program, or anyone that knows Daryl and has his phone number, as I do, Pat, you stay listening to the program.
We're going
to
call him.
Great. Yeah, we're going to try and get hold of Daryl, who can ring in, because he's your man. He's an entomologist, and there's nothing he doesn't know about insects, bugs, and pests.
Beautiful. Pat, okay. Stay tuned. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Sabrina.
Okay. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you. Now, Margaret has called. Hi, Margaret. What's going on with your thing?
Passion fruit.
There we go. Hello, Margaret. Margaret sent through some photos of the passion fruit.
She's got crinkly leaves.
Crinkly leaves.
Mm.
It looks like the passion fruit virus. I bought them from two separate nurseries.
Yep.
And they're young and they're developing the virus. So my question to you is, are there any varieties of passion fruit that aren't susceptible to this virus?
No. because the problem is, Margaret, is virus are transmitted by insect vectors. So if you've got insects flitting around, sucking sap, going from one passion fruit to another, they're going to spread the virus. Now, I think you've either had the little green leaf hopper or thrips on those leaves. The flower, the bud of the flower looks weird as well.
There aren't any flowers. They're really young.
Yeah. So all those crinkly leaves may not be a virus. It can actually be an insect.
Oh.
Sucking the sap when the leaf is in its early stages of development. So I wouldn't give up on them yet.
All right. Okay. That's really lovely.
Yeah.
Okay.
So go and get yourself a bit of neem oil and spray the leaves, particularly the backs of the leaves, and see how you go with that.
That's fantastic, and thank you for the advice. And by the way, I just love your book.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you, then. Anyway,
bless
thanks
you.
Thanks for calling, Margaret. Don't give up on your passion fruit.
No.
But don't give up on your horsefly treatment. Dr. Daryl Hardy, a.k.a. Dr. Buggalugs, is on the line. Daryl, how do you address a horsefly problem?
Not by sir. Oh,
is this shock therapy, you two? I mean, sitting here and then I got this ABC.
Wow. Emergency!
Help! We need you. Whatever.
Whatever. Whatever.
Well, we need you, Daryl.
I wasn't listening to you. I was just chilling out.
You're not chilling out anymore, my friend.
Tell me about it.
Okay, so we had a phone call asking for his mates that live in the bush. What can you do with when you have a plague of horsefly? Is there anything you can do to help control the large
kill
numbers?
The horses.
Kill the horses. No, they didn't want to kill the horses. But
that just created other problems to kill the horse because other flies would come in. So,
yeah, that's true.
So let me get this right. So the horseflies, or what they're calling horseflies, are annoying the horses, or annoying the people?
I think it's more that they're annoying the people, because he said for all his friends that live in the bush. So I don't think it's the horses. I think it's a people problem, because they bloody hurt when they sting you.
Yeah, they've got a little bite thing on them. They're proboscis. Yeah, they're sort of proboscis. They sort of have a bit of a chew on you. Yeah, they're bloodletting things. Yeah. I'm just wondering if when they say horse flies, do they mean stable flies?
That's what I had in my mind, that it was more stable flies.
Look, this has been an ongoing huge issue with landowners and market gardeners. When you say bush, I'm thinking, are we talking things like up around north of Perth, where there's a lot of small landholders with
I would say so. Pat didn't give us a specific geographical base for it, but I'm presuming so.
Yeah. Look, this has been going on for 20, 30 years now, because what happened, have you got time to have a chat about this now?
Yeah, that's why we've rung you, Daryl.
Okay, yeah, well, I thought you might have wanted a quick answer, like kill the horses, like a So what happened was, there used to be all these market gardens out there.
Yeah.
And originally they used to just bury all the leftover, or just plough them in, just leave them in the paddock, the leftover stalks and things like that. The stable fly would come in and feed up on them and breed, and then they would move around and be an issue with the people working in the on these areas. But then a lot of people started having lifestyle changes and coming in, buying some land up there and getting horses. And then, of course, the stable fly started attacking the horses. So then they made it, I think it was a law some time ago, they could just leave rotting vegetable material after they'd done the muck gutting, and that's actually composted and things like that. So that reduced the problem. But long term, that hasn't got rid of the problem. So you got this. The problem is you've got the proximity of the lifestylers with their horses and the vegetable production. And they've been working it for a long, long time trying to reduce the impact. But you only need a few of these flies and they move in on the horses. And because the horses sweat and there's urine and things and like that. And they love that for a feed to develop their ovaries and get their wings going. So, look, they've tried lots of different things. And To be honest, it's a whole community.
I'm with you.
That everybody does their bit.
Yeah.
But look, there's probably one of the things that you could do is spray if the horses aren't in paddocks or in barns and things like that. They can actually spray the walls of the barns and that with residual pyrethroids.
Okay.
And any flies that come in to attack the horses, they'll actually land on the buildings. and they'll die before they get to the horses. So you're not actually spraying the horses with anything nasty.
Yep.
You're actually just spraying the bilge. So there's several, I can't go into the chemicals, but there's several chemicals that you can use, and they'll last for up to 6 months on the building. They just so if they get drawn into the structure of the building, and then they desorb. So any insects are liking there will actually die.
Okay, so we need...
And you're not spraying the horses, and it's quite safe for the people. So there's some of the hygiene ones that people have registered for internal use, for not internal inside the person, but inside your house. Control and things like that. So that shows you that they're on the safe side. So, but you can get some stronger chemicals, which are only exterior. And the good news is they'll take care of your spiders and ants and all sorts of things.
Oh, no, we don't want to kill the spiders, Darryl, because the ABC are friends to spiders.
Well, one of the things is, well, here we go again. If you don't want to get rid of the stable flies, then you might have a...
there was an old lady. There was an old lady who poisoned a fly.
They answer, don't they?
Yeah. They do. Well, that's good. So there is a solution for people sort of around their buildings. They can get the synthetic pyrethroid surface spray.
And there's a thing, you can put blankets on the horses and they can be impregnated with chemicals and things like that as well.
Yeah.
And
the blankets, not the horses impregnated, but the blankets impregnated. Yep.
That's right, yeah. So there's those sorts of things as well. So, there are a range of different things to try. But the department used to have a liaison, Depot used to have a liaison officer that helped the things. But I think that's been phased out now.
Been sacked because
Darryl Hardy, thank you for answering the bug signal.
No problems, anytime. Just shock me. I love it.
That was Dr. Darryl Hardy, a.k.a. Dr. Bugalugs, with his comprehensive answer as to what to do about horseflies. And this correspondent says, with horseflies, the cure is nearly worse than the complaint. The beasties must be whacked hard with the open hand.
Yeah, you reckon you have to belt them with a hammer? If you smack them on your leg, they just dust themselves off and, with your hand, and off they go again. But they're like a racehorse, those flies.
Carl has got a bug solution.
Oh.
Hello, Kyle.
Hello, Carl.
Good morning, ladies. We observed in Byford that where my girlfriend used to have cats.
Yeah.
When the last one died, not from high speed lead poisoning, but just died.
Yeah.
We noticed the mosquito population really, really cracked. And we also noticed at the same time that the bird population had increased. And we saw this also at a friend's place down in Yabberup.
Right.
With all these little birds flitting around above the lawn down there.
Yeah.
There was hardly any mosquitoes around. And we saw a similar sort of pattern develop the cat stopped being around. So,
So you get rid of the cats, the birds come back, the birds love eating mosquitoes, as do the microbats. And so nature has taken care of a population explosion of one thing by controlling it with another. I love it.
We've got to keep our nature as our ultimate ecosystem service provider, essential service provider.
Yep.
Keep that around.
I am so on the same page as you, Carl.
Beautifully put, Carl. Thank you for that.
Rightio.
Thank you very much, Carl. That's awesome.
Now, Rob is in Broome. Hello, Rob.
Good morning, Amber and
Sabrina.
Thank you for having me today.
It's
Thanks
our pleasure.
Coming.
My big bananas keep on falling over when they go into fruit.
So they're too heavy and the root system of the banana it's not strong enough to hold the actual banana trunk plus the fruit. Which is why in some of the banana plantations you see they have prop sticks for when they get the bunches of banana forming.
Yes.
So you might need to fashion yourself some prop sticks.
I've done that, Sabrina, with some dried bamboo sticks.
Yeah.
That works well.
Yeah.
But I thought there might be a garden solution to toughening the roots up. They get dried chook poo, a little bit of MPK every couple of months, 311.
Yeah.
Water sprays every second day. So they're spoiled. But, yeah, they keep on falling over and I've got props everywhere and I thought, nah, there's got to be a solution.
Okay. So what I reckon's going on is they're getting enough nitrogen so that you get all that upper growth, but yep, they're not getting enough phosphorus. So phosphorus is really important for root development.
Yes, okay.
So I'd get some rock minerals around there. Yep. And try and ease off a bit on the nitrogen so that there's more energy going into the root system.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, is that good?
I've had it for 20-odd years and I got Cavendish and sugars and they produce beautiful fruit.
Oh, nice.
I love those sugar bananas.
Just bragging.
Mm. Yeah, they go very, very sweet when you spoil them. But,
yeah. Have you put stuff in with the pindan? Because the problem with pindan, when it gets really wet, it doesn't have a lot of substance to it.
Yeah, that's right. 20-odd years ago I was using dead fish carcasses and whole fish frames from the port where I worked.
Fantastic. God, that stuff is good.
Wow.
I dig that through regularly. But I must say, not the last 5 or 8 years or whatever, but anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks, Rob.
Thank you, Rob.
Congrats on your bananas. 1300 221025 is the number to call if you would like to ask Sabrina a question. We have a couple of lines free. John has a suggestion with the stable flies. He says there might be a conversion process. Leave out a saucer of beer. This will make stable flies into unstable flies. John, I don't think that's a genuine solution. I think you are pulling our lady legs.
And that's very funny.
It was very funny. I did appreciate the jokes. Having the cat, though, kills off mice. I don't have to use baits. Let nature take care of itself. Doug is in Maddington. Hello, Doug.
Good morning. Yeah. Queen's granite plum. They're supposed to be the good tucker.
Oh, okay. I don't know it. I'll have to Google it. I've never heard of it.
All right. Well, plums generally, that's to be high in antioxidants and all that sort of good stuff.
Yeah. So it's a new variety of plum?
Apparently, yeah. Well, it's been out for a year, I suppose.
Ah, it's a native plant. It's not a plum.
It's not, but it's high in antioxidants.
So I just need to know. I need to know its actual scientific name, that's all.
Yeah. I don't know. But would you need a male and female for that?
If it's a native plum, no. So I think you mean – or do you mean the green garnet plum? There's a queen garnet, not granite.
Oh, looks like a typo. Yeah. Queen's garnet, granite.
I'd say it's a garnet, the queen garnet plum. Does that sound about right?
You've not come across it.
Okay, well, I haven't either. But they sell it down in Bunbury, I see. It is a stone fruit, but I'm still trying to find it. So there must be someone that knows about the queen garnet plum and knows more about it than what I do. It looks like a plum, though. By the look of the plum, I think it's a – well, it's just – I think what it is it's an Australian-bred plum, okay?
Yeah,
so it's a new one. It's high in antioxidants. And what would you like to know about it? Do you want to know where
you need a male and female?
I would suggest being a plum that you do. You need a cross. You need something to cross pollinate it with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'll need a cross pollinator. Now,
right.
Where you get the actual plum from, I do not know.
No.
Where you'd be able to buy it from.
Yep. Oh, well, I'll keep looking.
Sometimes, Doug, when new breeds, new varieties come out, they're actually not available to the public. Oh, they're not. Here we are. They're under a restricted license commercial grower. Mm. So you won't be able to buy one unless you buy the plums from the shop. So it's restricted to licensed commercial growers only.
All right.
But it is a plum.
Seed.
Well, if you tried to grow it from seed, you probably wouldn't get the same plum. It would revert back to what it's been hybridized from.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. You just have to keep buying the plums from down there in Bunbury, apparently they have them. I mean the actual fruit, not the tree.
Yeah, right.
Mm.
Thanks, Doug.
Okay, thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Well, that's good because I didn't know anything about that new plum, and now I do, Amber.
Couple of lines free, 1300 221 0025, while we do this.
It is that time again.
It is.
Sabrina's musical pick of the week. Pick of the week.
I know you're going to dig this.
Here we go now.
Very excited about this week's pick.
Yeah, because, you know, we've had a fair bit of rain. I turned my retick off probably about a month ago now, which other people should have done, I would suggest, because we get rain. So I've decided that we'll have a song about rain.
Nice.
And this is a like a version.
Oh, yeah.
This is by Pond.
Too cool for school.
Oh, so cool.
Here it comes. As is usually the case, you can't please all of the people all of the time. Someone says, great choice, Sab, and another one says, pick of the week, it's a bit like the cheap rip-off you can buy from Temu.
When your team's stuck behind a paywall on TV...
Let me in!
Get it free without ads. Download the ABC Listen app and hear your team now.
Yes!
Last year's plant swap was such a huge success, we're going to do it all over again. It will be taking place on Saturday the 29th of August at Perth City Farm. Bring along your healthy extra plants to swap in return for a new plant. All plant and seedling varieties are accepted as long as they are in good condition and healthy and need to be in certified potting mix. Running from 8 to 10 a.m., we will broadcast live from the Perth City Farm. So come and say hello, grab a coffee at the cafe and browse the farmer's market while you're there. We would love to see you. It was such a rip-snorting success last year, was it not?
Did you take anything home?
I didn't.
Oh, didn't you?
No.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, I was a bit late to the party, I think. I didn't have anything to swap.
Oh, no, because you're on air, whereas I get there and go, I'll have that, and then I'll bring a box of stuff. I'm going to bring some dahlia tubers this year.
What's your dahlia collection like?
Pretty good.
I've got
about 20 different dahlias. So I'll bring some of my dahlias. I'm going to bring cuttings from Tithonia, which is a Mexican sunflower shrub that you can't get anywhere now. It's beautiful. It's a big bush and it has these beautiful, huge sunflower flowers on it. No one grows it. It's tough as old boots. Comes from Mexico. Get Tithonia wherever you... Well, anyway, I'll bring some. I'll bring some bits and pieces.
Jimmy is in Mount Helena. Good morning, Jimmy.
Morning, ladies. Sabrina.
Yes, Jimmy.
I have a wetting agent that you'd be very familiar with.
Yeah?
And the instructions say to use... what is it? 20 milliliter per litre.
Yeah?
Which seems very excessive.
20 mils per 100 mils?
Yeah, that's 180 milliliter per watering can.
Ah, so that solution would be if it's in a dilute, if it's in a 2 liter spray bottle.
Now this is a concentrate.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you stay online and we pass you back to our beautiful producer, Ash, and I will give you a ring after the program.
Oh, okay.
Does that sound good?
Share us with
that. That sounds great. Smart.
Okay.
Thanks for that. Beautiful. I'll put you on hold for Asha. And now we have Barry, who's in Guildford. Hi, Barry.
Hello, hello, ladies.
Hello, Barry.
Sabrina, I have a butternut pumpkin, and it's covered in male flowers. It's beautiful to look at, but yep. Not much damn good for breeding pumpkins.
No, absolutely not, because the boys are always keen to get to the gate there, Barry. So what you're going to do is you're going to just hold them back a bit, and the tendrils that have the flowers, which are all boys, you're going to cut at least a third up to a half off those tendrils so that they have to produce different growth, new shoots, and those new shoots should produce girly flowers. And also now the temperatures are getting cooler, you'll find that you'll get more female flowers.
Oh, okay. Well, I can afford to be positive then.
Yeah, because oh, yes.
I've done the chop it off.
Yep.
And I've had probably 6 or 7 new shoots going directions, and I examine them closely and I see mile, mile, mile.
Right.
A whole congress of males.
Yeah. Keep plucking those male flowers off.
Okay.
Yep. So rip them off. Useless they are at present.
And as you do it, Barry, as you do it, whisper to them, not all men.
I will not cooperate with you in any way, ladies.
Thank you, Barry. 1-300-222-1025 is the number to speak to local legend Sabrina Hunt, national legend, in fact. Charmaine, is it a pistachio tree?
Yes, it is, actually.
Oh, you poor thing. It's split in two, isn't it, Sab?
I wept when I saw that picture.
Yeah, she said a rude word.
When I got home.
I did. I swore, actually, when I saw that.
I know, and we don't know there was a storm a couple of weeks ago. We were away.
Mm.
And, yeah, we came back to that, and then we looked at the top of the split, and it's black. Mm. It's like a black patch.
Yeah.
And we're thinking perhaps lightning struck it. We don't know.
Yeah, it actually looks like a lightning strike.
It does. To me, not an expert.
Now, how long ago did this happen?
Well, we were away all through April. So I believe a couple of weeks ago there was a storm. There was a bit of rainstorm, a bit of lightning.
There was.
And we've got an outdoor camera, and we saw just a bit of branch on the ground. That's all we assumed. A couple of branches had dropped off, but we came back to that. And can we save it?
Well, give it a good old crack. Now, what you're going to have to do, Charmaine, is to prune all the top off.
Yeah.
Because the weight of the branches, and basically what you are going to do is you are going to get 2 or 3 bloody big bolts, and you're going to have to bolt in 3 places up the trunk. Yeah. Because that's the only thing that's going to save it.
What, to try and pull it back together?
To pull it together, because the split goes from where it first branches out almost all the way down to the bottom. Yeah. Now, it's not the centre of the trunk that you need to be worried about. It's keeping bacteria and fungus in particular rot out of the centre of the wood, but to keep the cambium layer, which is just underneath the bark, to keep that flowing. So the bolts that you put through, which will have to be high tension bolts that you'll screw in tight, will hold it together long enough, hopefully, so the bark will grow over and close the wound.
How would you even bring that thing together, though? So you chop all the top branches off and get some kind of, you know.
You'll actually need a winch. You're going to have to winch it together.
Oh, God, I think my husband, he'll get the chainsaw out, I think.
Honestly, Charmaine, that's the only chance of getting your tree to survive. You'll have to winch the two parts together, then you're going to have to bolt the trunk together.
Gosh, emergency surgery. Rest in peace, Charmaine's pistachio tree.
How long have you had it?
Well, I planted it about 21, 22 years ago.
Oh, my God. And they're so slow growing.
I know. And it's all underneath. There's clivias. There's all these
ferns.
Lovely. Yeah. All the ferns. A lot. I love the shade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps I might see a tree surgeon. Someone will have to do it for us.
Yeah, definitely. And they'd have the equipment.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, Charmaine, I'm so sad for you.
I know. You don't expect to go on holiday and come down and see a beautiful tree go kaput.
It does look like a lightning strike, though.
Yeah, it does to me too. Mm. Yeah. Oh, anyway, thank you for your
condolences. Bye bye. 1-300-221025. Momentarily forgot the number there, didn't I? Brad is in Vass. Hello, Brad.
Hello, ladies. How are you doing?
Very well, Brad. How is it in beautiful Vass?
It's absolutely marvellous here looking out at my queen garnet plum trees.
You've got the queen garnet, so you're a commercial grower.
No, I come from a grape growing and winemaking background, and I knew that if I bought enough queen garnets, I'd eventually find a mutant. So what I did is over 2018, 2019 and 2020, each of those years I bought 100 queen garnets.
Oh, my goodness.
And what I thought they were going to be partner carpic, but they turned out to be stenospermocarpic, which means that they have the outer skin of a seed, but they don't have anything inside. And over those 300 that I bought in 3 years, I found 6 mutants with seeds.
I grew
the 6 of them, and I've got them espaliered, I've got them planted, and I've got them in pots. And they did not revert to anything that I've ever seen. What they did is they remained the same with a fully anthocyanin inside pulp, medium to dark red, and as the almost jet black, but what is extremely dark red skin, eventually when the cell walls collapse, they fill that red pulp with even more red and they become a dark red pulp, which gives them their high antioxidant status.
Wow.
But I just use Santa Rosa to pollinate them.
So Santa Rosa, that's fascinating, actually, Brad. And I hadn't heard of that particular plum. And is it everything that they say it is?
Well, my other plum is Tegan Blue, which is also pollinated by Santa Rosa.
Right.
And the Tegan Blues leave Queen Garnet for dead.
Really? And is that only available to commercial growers or people yourself?
Tegan. My Tegan Blues were also grown from seed.
Right.
But Tegan Blue can be bought out of Hammer Barn. It can be bought out of all nurseries. It can be all.
Got a bluey fan here. Nice work.
Oh, Brad, that's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Send us a photo. I'd love to see the espalier on them. Thank you very much. And what incredible knowledge people have out there just doing the do and growing
and
things.
And sharing it. Sharing it with us.
Sharing it with us. Sarah is in Yokine. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. Good morning. I have a couple of orange trees.
Yeah.
They're well established, and they are amazing fruit growers. I think last year we got 200, maybe.
Yeah.
But they're getting very large, and obviously they have all their fruit on them at the moment.
Yeah.
they're green, so they haven't quite turned yet.
Yeah.
I don't know when to trim back and how much.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the thing about orange trees is they start producing flowers as soon as you do the harvest. So the most important time to prune is as soon as you have harvested them. Now, take out selected branches on the inside because you want flow, you want airflow and sunlight. Don't just prune all the way across the top and the side by a half or 50%. You have to take some of the branches out entirely at the trunk. So you're going to take a third of those off. Then you're going to prune a third down from all the branches that are remaining.
Okay. Brilliant. Good luck with that, Sarah. Thank you for Thank calling. You. And Bob from Gero has a recipe for horseflies, one part baby oil, one part citronella oil, one part Dettol. Mix it up, spray it on horses, spray on hat, clothes, wherever you want to keep the flies off.
Oh.
And Alan from Wandering suggests using a ratchet strap to pull that tree back together. Sab's taking a photograph of that recipe there. And hello to Carol in Balga. Thank you for your kind words. And let's see if we can get through a couple of questions on the texts.
Ratchet strap wouldn't do it. The tree's too big.
Too big, yeah, looking at that photograph. Annie says, good morning. Had some mature robinias removed yesterday, not ground out. Can I use blackberry on them and do I have to drill holes or can I paint it on?
You can paint it, you can drill it, you can pour it. Yep, and that will do the trick.
Okay, Judy, best deciduous trees that roots aren't invasive to be planted between house and retaining wall.
I need more information to recommend Sorry that. For that's that. That's a long answer.
We'll be back next week and perhaps we could get on to that.
Yes,
next week.
Definitely.
Sporty yep. Boys and their sporty balls are waiting in the booth next to Asha, who has her bobble hat, her Dockers bobble hat back on. We'll be back next week. Thanks for your company. Say bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.